Again, Kuno and Spur had trouble keeping up with the wild-ass Yaki Queen. She and her horse seemed tireless. There were no springs out here, at least none that Kuno and Spur knew about, and none that the Queen stopped at. So several times they stopped to pour water into their hats for their horses and to take a few spare sips themselves. Fire Eyes was staying at least 100 yards ahead of them, and sometimes that gap opened to a quarter mile. By midday, Kuno was beginning to believe that the Yaki Queen and her tireless horse were supernatural. She slowed her pace only to make sure that Kuno and Spur were still behind her. Up one canyon and down another they traveled, in some of the most waterless, rugged country Kuno had ever seen. If there was anything growing on any of the knobs and ridges they were riding between, he couldn't see it. The only life was the occasional hawk or small flock of turkey buzzards crowding some moldering animal corpse. Around 1:30, judging by the sun, Kuno and Spur galloped over a gravelly knob and saw the Queen standing beside her cream about 50 yards ahead, at the entrance to a narrow canyon opening between two towering sandstone ridges. She was holding a bandana out to the horse, rubbing its lips. They reined up before the Queen, who tossed her head toward the narrow entrance to the canyon behind her, then reined the cream around and batted her moccasined heels against its sides.
Stay close now.
100 yards into the narrow defile, the wind and water-sculpted sand rising to their horses' fetlocks, she reined up suddenly and waved her arm sideways across the top of her head. Kuno followed her gaze to the top of a finger of solid rock. A figure stood there, silhouetted against the bright desert sky. Kuno could see tan breeches, a red sash, and a red bandana holding long black hair tight against the brave's head. He held a rifle in one hand down by his side, and after a few seconds he lifted it straight up above his head. He touched his sash, turned to face the opposite direction, and then raised his other hand. The sun flashed off the signal mirror in his hand. Fire Eyes heeled the barb on up the meandering canyon. Kuno and Spur flanked her, looking around warily. Kuno felt the hair on the back of his neck stand up. He sensed a primal menace. The fear was like hot lead seeping into his bones. He resisted the urge to reach forward and slide his Winchester from his saddle boot, instinctively feeling eyes on him and knowing that the move could get him killed. He looked at Spur. The old lawman was riding stiff-backed, grinning as though he were watching dancing girls undress on the stage of some frontier opera house.
What the hell are you smiling about?
I always grin like that when I'm about to load my drawers.
As they wended their way through the canyon, Kuno saw several more armed pickets standing among the rocks. They watched expressionlessly as the Yaki Queen and her gringo partners moved past them. Finally, they rounded a curve, and the canyon opened into a large pie-shaped bowl with a creek running through it diagonally. Brush huts were scattered along both sides of the creek, and smoke from several outdoor cookfires rose. There were several large rope corrals containing a colorful selection of mustangs amongst the groves lining the creek. Here and there, animal hides were stretched between standing poles. Bulky, raisin-faced old women ambled amongst the huts and the fires and the stretched hides that several were in the midst of curing. Small children ran amongst them. As Fire Eyes reined the cream to a stop beside a large jacale partly dug into the side of a low sandy hill, an old man stepped out of the hut. He wore a breechclout, fur moccasins, and a wolf fur cape with a soiled blue bandana wrapped around his forehead. He was gray and withered, his face long and angular, sun-dried flesh hanging from his bulging cheekbones. One of his eyes was the color of an eggshell, and a jagged scar ran over the socket. Fire Eyes sat her cream before him, and the old man scrutinized the girl's partners incredulously, lips parted to reveal only one yellow front tooth. At the same time, a younger man walked out of a jacale opposite the old man's. A small brush arbor fronted the young man's lodge. A colorfully dressed old woman sat cross-legged on a blanket on the earthen floor, sort of rocking back and forth, a striped blanket draped across her shoulders. As the young man muttered something to the old woman, he turned to dip water from an olla hanging from an arbor beam, then followed the old woman's gaze to the newcomers. The young man, who wore a calico blouse and deerskin leggings, had Fire Eyes' fine features. He was almost as pretty, and he was long-limbed and muscular without being bulky. If he wasn't the girl's brother, he was at least a cousin. Now he dropped the dipper back into the clay water vessel and strode out from the Hakale. He had a navy revolver wedged inside the waistband of his deerskin breeches, and an antler-handled knife was sheathed low on his thigh, just above his knee. As he approached the newcomers, he shifted his gaze from Fire Eyes to her two unlikely companions and back again. His eyes shone hotly with the same passionate amber as did Fire Eyes's, and Kuno forcefully resisted the urge to reach for his Winchester. After a long conversation in Yaki, the young man, whom Kuno took to be Fire Eyes's brother, wheeled and stomped back into his own Hakale. Fire Eyes turned to her guests.
You will be welcome here.
She jerked her gaze toward the creek.
Make your camp by the stream. There is grass for your horses. Food will be brought to you. You will be welcome here.
Well, it's good to know we're welcome here.
Kuno and Spur rode past several Hakales toward the creek.
Especially since I don't reckon I've ever felt less welcome anywhere. And I've been unwelcome a lot of places.
Sometimes, kid, you just gotta let go and be a tumbleweed in a cyclone.
Spur glanced over his shoulder as Cochise picked his way through the rocks, sage, green grass clumps, and willows that widely sheathed the stream, flashing in the trees just beyond.
Just the same, I know I'll be sleeping with one eye open tonight.
Later, after they had set up camp and eaten a thin, dark stew with some kind of shredded meat in it, Fire Eyes moved toward them through the brush, angling away from the Hakales and a remuda of mustangs frolicking in the misty blue twilight. Both he and Spur stood as she approached, a white man's tradition that was likely not recognized here, as she gave them both a faintly puzzled look. Fire Eyes sat down on a rock on the other side of the fire. Spur sank back against his saddle with the clay pot, and Kuno sat on a log.
What's the plan? We appreciate the hospitality and all, but what are we doing here? It's obvious we ain't exactly welcome.
That was my brother you saw earlier, Tushikini. It means red water in your language. The old man is my father, the chief of the Agave clan. I have not seen them for a time. A wedge came between us when I decided to form my own clan and to make war myself in my own way. My father and brother were insulted. Especially when I gain the respect of the other clan chiefs. But we have discussed the stolen guns and the dynamite and General Cuesta's plan for Montana de Loco Oso, and we have agreed to work together.
She shifted her gaze from Kuno to Spur.
To work together with you in defeating the gunrunners and Cuesta. We will ride from here at dawn tomorrow. I have learned from my brother that Cuesta is awaiting the guns at the foot of our sacred mountain.
How many warriors do you have?
15 have agreed to join me, including my brother.
That gonna be enough?
It should be enough if I can get into Cuesta's camp first and kill him. The others should be much easier to kill after the general is dead.
Kuno and Spur shared a dubious glance.
What makes you think you can get into Cuesta's camp and kill him before he kills you?
For the oldest reason in the world, mi amigo.
Fire Eyes stared into the thickening darkness beyond Spur.
General Cuesta is in love with me.
General Arturo Cuesta woke with a start.
Adios!
The general made the sign of the cross on his chest over his long silk underwear shirt, revealed by his unbuttoned blue uniform tunic.
Those men are going to be the death of me yet. Mierda!
Of course, it was better that the occasional shots echoing around the near ridges were made by his own men hunting the area around the train than by another batch of rampaging Yaki. Still, Cuesta's nerves were shot. The general was sprawled atop a red velvet settee that he'd ordered his men to set on the roof of his own private rail car. His car and the rest of his 12-car military train sat at the end of the new railroad line, nearly at the foot of formidable Montana de Loco Oso. The general and his small army, around 50 federal soldiers, were stalled there until they could get more rails hauled up from Mexico City and until they received the dynamite and badly needed newer model Gatling guns and ammunition that the general was having shipped down from Arizona. Mexico, it seemed, was low on both iron and black powder. The general had ordered the expensive, ornately carved settee hauled up to the roof and a cream burlap canopy erected over it, because after 2 months of being stalled here in this godforsaken Sierra in north-central Sonora, 400 miles from his home, the car's close confines were beginning to drive him as loco as the mountain he was assaulting, causing him to wake at night, heart fluttering, gasping for air, believing he was being buried alive. And the intermittent rifle shots of the crew, either hunting or target shooting, wasn't doing his nerves any good either. At least the lack of dynamite had halted the blasting of the tunnel through the mountain, though that would resume as soon as the dynamite arrived with Cuesta's business associates from Arizona, or with, Cuesta gave an evil, cunning grin, the notorious bandito Carlos Riata, he'd sent to intercept the caravan, and who would spare Cuesta about half the gold bullion the general had agreed to pay the Americanos. Of course, Cuesta wasn't certain Riata was up to the task, as the bandito's own ranks had been cut down in his own war with the Yaqui. But Cuesta had thought it worth the risk, as there wasn't much the Americanos could do about the double cross except to get angry about it. In the end, they'd hand over the guns and ammunition and be paid. Cuesta looked around, his boredom a palpable thing, a weighing depression. Once the rail line, which his superiors, including the president, had ordered Cuesta to oversee personally, had made it this far from Mexico City, his crew had encountered one delay after another, and there was also the problem of the Yaqui, who had, until recently, been making night raids on the work camps that had been set up on the far side of the creek from where Cuesta's private car now sat, waiting for supplies. The pesky little Indians, vicious as wolverines, seemed to think the mountain was sacred, harboring the heart of their warrior god, the Loco Grizzly, and were intent on keeping Cuesta's crew from blasting a hole through it. So far, Cuesta's men had been able to hold off the swarthy hordes on their wild mustangs because most of the Yaqui were armed with only bows and arrows. But Cuesta's men were running dangerously low on ammunition, which was also hard to come by in Mexico City. Fortunately, since the blasting had ceased and the work crews released, the night raids had tapered off, but the general remained uneasy. He spent many idle hours nervously wondering why he was uneasy.
Where have you gone, my beautiful Fuega?
He dropped his stockinged feet to the car's slatted wooden roof near his polished black boots and swept the area around the train with his gaze. There was only sagebrush and pinyons and low, flat-topped escarpments in three directions under a dry, cobalt sky. Straight ahead of the train, a half mile away across a dry creek bed, Montana del Loco Oso rose like a massive, variegated sandstone lizard's head, lifted in stoic defiance of Cuesta's rails. At least, it looked like a lizard's head from Cuesta's vantage, though from a distance, he had to agree, it looked like a grizzly standing on its hind legs, jaws wide, on the verge of a deadly attack. The mine was just on the other side, a half a lousy mile through the mountain. So close, and yet so far. Probably a year's worth of tedious, hard, dangerous labor while Cuesta's soldiers held off the Yaqui, led by the lovely savage queen, known even to her own people as Ojos del Fuego. Again, raw desire chewed at Cuesta's gut. The girl had ravaged his nerves and harassed his men, killing several dozen in her early morning or late night raids. And yet, the image of her dusky, comely figure sitting that cream stallion just out of rifle range, armed with a Winchester as well as a bow and arrow, haunted his waking reveries.
Incoming riders, General!
Cuesta followed the man's pointing arm to the east. Three riders, little more than moving smudges from this distance, were jouncing down from a low, dun ridge. Cuesta reached for his field glasses on the small table beside the settee and lifted the glasses to his eyes. Three riders, two holding rifles straight up from their right thighs, white flags tied around the ends of the barrels blew in the dry wind. The rider in the middle sat his mount oddly, slouched forward slightly, both hands held close to the cream saddle horn, as though tied to it. Cuesta lowered the glasses slowly and frowned at the three riders as he watched with his naked eyes, his heart quickening faintly. A cream? No, it couldn't be. Again, he lifted the glasses until the riders were bouncing around in both spheres of magnified vision. He gripped the glasses with both hands to steady them and swore under his breath as he made out the long hair, slender shoulders, and the deerskin vest that the beautiful Yaqui Queen wore so beguilingly, showing just enough of herself to make a lonely man howl like a gut-shot coyote. Could it really be her? Or was the jouncing black-haired image in his field glasses merely the lusty conjuring of his earlier reverie, the product of an overheated imagination? Cuesta held the glasses firmly, staring, his heart beating faster, his lips parting as he drew more air.
General?
The general lowered the field glasses with his left hand, raising his right to the guard.
Hold your fire, Sergeant. We will see what they want.
Are my eyes playing tricks on me, General? Or is that...
The sergeant, crouching over the Gatling gun that was mounted like a giant mosquito on the opposite car, turned his mustached, sunburned face toward the approaching riders and drew two fingers over his eyes as if to clear them.
I don't know.
Cuesta walked to the end of the roof, descended the metal rungs to the platform, and was turning just as the three riders rode up along the cinder bed. Cuesta pursed his lips and clasped his hands behind his back, composing himself, despite seeing that the girl riding with the old gringo and the young gringo was indeed Fire Eyes. Cuesta's mind hadn't been playing tricks on him. His breath caught in his chest, and his heart skipped a couple of beats as the Yaqui's dark eyes, he could imagine how they blazed when she was riled, met his, regarding him coolly, almost disdainfully. Her wrists were cuffed together, and the chain between the two cuffs was tied to the woman's saddle horn. The older man canted his head to one side, narrowing one eye at the sergeant, crouched over the Gatling gun, atop the railroad car to Cuesta's right, only about 6 feet away. He slid his gaze to the general.
General Cuesta?
Si, I am Cuesta. Who are you, and how did you manage to trap this wildcat?
The general slid his eyes around the trio, but he wanted nothing more than to feast his eyes on the savage, beautiful Yaqui before him, sitting the cream barb that was almost as legendary as the girl herself. From the first time that he'd seen her over a year ago, and during a raid on the train on which he'd been traveling just west of here, she'd captured his imagination, as well as every fiber of his male desire. How he feared her and loved her. He was a married man. He would even say a happily married man. But he wanted nothing more than to touch this Yaqui girl before him, to sniff her, to possess her body as well as her soul. He'd fantasized often of keeping her, as so many of his cohorts kept their own mistresses, in the apartment he kept in Monterey. It would be like taking a mountain lion to the opera, of course, but where this Yaqui queen was concerned, Cuesta knew he was out of his mind.
I'm Spur Morgan, the Yunker's Kuno Massey. Yeah, we're gringos, but we understand you're offering a bounty worth 2,000 of our American dollars for dear little Miss Fire Eyes here. Well, here she is, alive, just like you wanted.
Where? How did you come to capture this beastly creature?
We're bounty hunters.
The younger man sat in his saddle casually, both gloved hands draped over his saddle horn.
And right good at it. Never mind the where and the how, General. If you fork over that $2,000, we'll turn the Yaqui Maiden over to you. To do with as you please.
The young man shaped a knowing grin, slitting his blue eyes. Cuesta indulged in a close study of the Yaqui Queen, who did not return his gaze, but kept her eyes on the platform steps beneath his polished boots. She almost appeared to be in a trance, not defeated, but merely subdued for the moment. How smooth her cherry skin, how desirable, even with its coating of desert dust. The gamey smell of the Yaqui Queen drew his pants taut across his crotch. Suddenly, self-conscious, somehow feeling his thoughts might be plain on his features or elsewhere, Cuesta felt an angry burn.
You will be paid when I am able to pay you, hijo. You are the interlopers here. The gold will need to be weighed, and the officer in charge of gold payments is occupied with other work.
If you think we're just gonna turn this golden goose loose without so much as an IOU, you got another thing coming, General.
Darcy.
The sergeant crouched over the Gatling gun, one hand on the contraption's wooden handle. The deadly maul was aimed at the old man's face. The sergeant grinned, showed his large, tobacco-stained teeth beneath his black handlebar mustache.
Well, Now that you mention it, I guess you done got us beat in firepower.
Cuesta hated the arrogance of all gringos, even those in Mexico, and he'd never known one who had not displayed such bad manners. Spur reached into his vest pocket and produced a small pocket knife. He reached over toward FireEyes.
I reckon we'll turn her over to you, General, and rely on your honor to see that we're paid.
You will be paid.
Cuesta meant it. However much he hated gringos, he felt truly grateful to these two, and it could never get out that he did not pay his bounties. He studied FireEyes as the man sawed through the rope binding her cuffs to her saddle horn and hoped the fervent beating of his heart did not show on his face.
What do you say, Chiquita? Are you going to make me throw you in a cage like a wild puma? Or are you going to try and act civil?
Slowly, she shook her head, and he was surprised to see no fiery flash of anger in her eyes.
I am done. When I can be caught so easily by two gringo cowboys, it is time to put down my weapons. I am a disgrace to the Yaqui.
She lifted her gaze to the general's and curled her rich upper lip.
I will cause you no trouble if you shoot me right away.
Cuesta rubbed his goatee as he studied the proud, sullen creature before him. He'd be damned if she didn't sound like she meant what she'd said. His heart skipped a couple more beats. He looked at the two gringos sitting their tired horses on the other side of the queen and canted his head to indicate the rear of the train.
You may stable your horses in the stable car. As a supply train recently arrived, there is plenty of hay and oats. We have a cantina car well stocked with beer and tequila. It is also supplied with two señoritas. I'm sure the two of you will find your liking. They're cheap enough. In the morning, I will see that you are paid, and you will be free to leave.
Damn risky.
Spur and Kuno led their horses up the ramp and through the open doors of one of the train's four stable cars.
Cuesta could just as easily have her hauled off to the creek and shot against the bank, and us along with her.
A girl who looks like her?
He and Spur led their mounts toward a gap amongst the tied horses at the rear of the car.
Ain't likely any man with red blood in his veins could do that. Besides, she's convinced he's gone for her.
I'll admit, old Cuesta looked like he was about to fall on his ass when he saw her, but how in the hell did she know?
I reckon the wanted alive bounty tipped her off.
He could have intended to torture the hell out of her.
Spur tied the roan to a metal hook in the stable car wall, then hitched his pants and gun belts up higher on his bony hips and walked over to a water barrel standing beside the open door. He leaned forward and turned his head to stare up the train toward Cuesta's private car.
And maybe that's what he's doing. Sure would be nice to have a look-see.
That didn't look possible, as from this vantage he could see two rifle-wielding federales milling around Cuesta's car, positioned there to make sure FireEyes didn't escape. There was probably another guard on the car's platform. And then, of course, there was the sergeant, so proudly hunkered over the Gatling gun on the next car back.
You worry too much.
They had no intention of unsaddling their horses. Earlier that morning, a Yaqui scout for FireEyes' brother, Redwater, had reported that the gunrunner's wagons were headed toward Cuesta's train, within 10 miles, and moving at a clip of about 3 miles an hour. Barring delays, that would bring them on up to the train within 2 hours. By then, Spur and Kuno hoped to have Cuesta dead and his men distracted enough so that they, FireEyes, and the 23 Yaqui, hunkered down just over a low rise to the north, awaiting FireEyes' signal, could take over the train. If all went as planned, it would be the two gringos and the Yaqui, not Cuesta's men, who would meet Bennett Beers, Dave Sapp, and Flora Hammerlick when they came lifting dust from the west.
Worrying is how I've made it this far, kid. What kind of signal do you expect you'll give us?
I reckon it's time to dance.
Kuno rushed out the front door and onto the platform. Kuno grabbed the ladder running up the rear of the car ahead of him and climbed. With his head just above the lip of the car's roof, Kuno stopped and surveyed the situation before him. A corporal crouched tensely over the Gatling gun that he had aimed toward the front of the train and the sound of all the sudden commotion. His back was facing Kuno. Kuno glanced behind him. Spur was on the opposite car's ladder, and now, as the Federale atop that car swung his Gatling gun toward the lawman, Spur extended his .44. The shot blew the man back away from the cannon and off the car to land atop the cinder bed. He shot the Gatling gunner off the car behind the saloon car, then glanced, nodding, toward Kuno as he hauled his old, weary body up over the roof. Kuno shot the Federale off the Gatling gun on his own car's roof and ran up to man the gun himself. There were three more men with rifles on the three cars ahead of him, but FireEyes had done a good job of confounding the three enough that none had gotten their rifles leveled on Kuno before Kuno started turning his Gatling gun's crank. He watched all three through his puffing powder smoke lurch to their feet as the bullets shredded their tunics and caused blood to fly out their backs before they twisted around and flew over the sides of their respective cars. Kuno glanced around to see several more Federales going down in the same fashion as Kuno's had. He glanced to the east where a line of Yaqui riders, their faces streaked with ochre and their horses all painted for war as well, galloped wildly toward the train, triggering carbines and flinging arrows. Hoping the Yaqui weren't wild with their shots, Kuno bounded away from the Gatling gun and, grabbing his .45, ran forward along the roof of the car. To his right, he could see several Federales lying prone against the side of the railroad bed, triggering rifles or pistols toward the general's private car. Smoke puffed from a rear corner window of the car as, presumably, the Yaqui Queen returned fire. Kuno leapt the 5-foot gap to the roof of the next car and took aim at the Federales. With them out of the way, Kuno jumped down to the platform of the general's car and rammed his shoulder against the car door. Suddenly, he fell inside the general's car. FireEyes was down on one knee, looking tough but harried and holding two smoking, silver-chased pearl-grip pistols in her fists. Kuno blinked at her. She was also naked, water beading on every inch of her tan skin.
Don't gringo mothers teach their boys it's not nice to stare?
She ran, crouching, to another rear window and triggered each of her guns in turn at the Mexicans forted up against the railroad bed. Kuno closed the door. He pulled back against the wall beside the door and saw a long copper bathtub sitting in the middle of the well-appointed car. The general sat in the tub, head thrown back, face turned toward Kuno, his open eyes sightlessly staring. His arms hung down from the sides of the tub. The water around the general was red. A bloody, gold-handled Spanish sword lay on the floor near his sagging left hand.
I decided he needed a bath more than I did.
Kuno quickly reloaded his Colt from his shell belt and glanced out the door's broken window. The Yaqui were swarming like ants on a beehive, and the Federales were dropping like flies. FireEyes stood and, without a bit of modesty, walked over to where her clothes were strewn near the tub in which the general lolled in the bloody water. She picked up her short doeskin skirt, stepped into it, and spat at the dead Cuesta.
Pig!
How in the hell did you manage that?
To stab him with his own sword?
FireEyes picked up her deerskin vest and shook it out in front of her.
The fool had it hanging on the wall. When I had him so aroused he couldn't think about anything other than what I was doing to him, I climbed out of the tub, took it off the wall, and gutted him like a javelina.
We heard, all right.
Spur was crouched with his face beyond the door's broken window. He was staring at Cuesta, then swallowed as he watched FireEyes pull her vest on. Spur cocked an ear to listen for a moment, as did Kuno.
Your people clean up right well.
Of course.
She grabbed one of the general's fancy pistols off the table she'd set it on. Kuno opened the door and stepped out onto the platform beside Spur, who was reloading one of his pistols.
I reckon we better jump to the next step in our little fandango, eh?
Yeah, we'd best drag the dead Federales off and get as many of us into their uniforms as we can. I can't wait to shake hands with them gunrunners.
Spur stepped past Kuno and into the general's car, where he picked up the general's wool uniform trousers and held them down in front of him.
You think they'll believe I'm Cuesta?
Best work on your accent.
An hour later, dressed in a Federale uniform he'd taken off a dead sergeant, hoping the blood wasn't too obvious, Kuno sat on the roof of the rail car flanking General Cuesta's private quarters. He could see Spur below on his left, sitting on the platform steps of the general's car, elbows on his knees, smoking. Like Kuno and the Yaqui, who had all donned the dead Federale's uniforms, all except FireEyes, that was, who was crouched out of sight in the general's car, He was waiting for the gunrunners to show. A uniformed Yaki sat on each of the cars behind Kuno's, ready to man their respective Gatling guns, while several more, including Redwater, milled like bored federales along the raised track bed. The others were waiting out of sight inside the saloon car, ready to bolt out at Spur's signal, rifles blasting.
See anything yet, kid?
Spur didn't look up, but stared straight off across the desert, where the gunrunners were due to appear any minute. When FireEyes had sent one of the Braves out a half hour ago to scout their position, they were only about a mile away. The old lawman was dressed in General Cuesta's spotless uniform, and while the pants were a little too long and loose in the waist, they fit him well enough for the few minutes he was going to need them. The general's leather-billed, gold-embroidered hat hung from his right knee.
It's showtime.
Damn.
Spur rose and stepped up onto the top of the platform, donning his hat and throwing his shoulders back, Kuno supposed, to make himself look like a general. As Kuno stared, two riders came around a distant camelback bluff. One by one, behind them, seven wagons jounced into view, one behind the other, spaced about 40 yards apart. Five or so outriders moved amongst the wagons, two ahead, one to each side, and another rider riding drag. The freight train was following an old Indian trail, running along a shallow, dry wash from the east. One of the lead riders raised his hand, and the men driving the wagons drew back on their reins. As the tan dust drifted over the wagons, the two lead riders heeled their mounts and galloped toward the train, keeping about 20 feet between them. Kuno's shoulders tensed, and he lowered the bill of his forage cap, hiding his eyes and the entire upper half of his face. He hoped that he, Spur, and the Yaki looked enough like federales for the next few minutes to pull off the intended ruse, and he prayed that the Yaki, as eager as broomtail Mustang stallions to lift some dust, could restrain themselves until all seven wagons had pulled up to the train. The riders dropped into the coulee and rode up the other side. Bennett Beers was on the left, Sapp on the right. Both men would recognize him right off if they inspected him carefully, so he kept his head down and his blue eyes shaded. It wasn't likely they'd see past his uniform, however, and they'd never suspect he'd be here on the Federale train, waiting to take them down. Beers and Sapp, unshaven and coated in dust, slowed their horses about 40 yards away as they eyed the train suspiciously. Kuno felt his hands sweating in his gloves. Maybe he should have stayed out of sight with the Yaki. Too late now. Besides, there was also a chance that Dave Sapp would recognize Spur from the Gatling gun mounted in the bell tower. But they'd had no one else amongst them who had even the slightest chance of impersonating General Cuesta. Kuno felt the taut muscles between his shoulders loosen slightly as Beers and Sapp gigged their horses up to FireEyes' brother, who, according to plan, walked out to meet them, one of the Federales' Springfield rifles held up high across his chest. Redwater knew little English, so in response to Beers' query, he merely stretched his left arm out to indicate Spur. Beers and Sapp put their mounts into spanking trots, and they ran their gazes across the train fleetingly before they reined up in front of the old lawman.
"Greetings, amigos!"
Spur threw his arms out in what he must have thought was a hearty Mexican greeting.
Señor Beers, I presume?
That's right. Been a hell of a pull. We lost a few wagons, but the bulk of guns and ammo are here. As long as you got the gold, that is.
Sí, señor. All the gold we discussed, as well as plenty of food and drink and even the company of two lovely ladies.
All right, then. Let's dance.
Beers reined his horse around.
Come on, boys! Bring him in!
Beers swung his steel dust around to face the train, as did Sapp, and Kuno felt his heart beat in his throat as he watched the wagons move toward him with maddening slowness. Beers and Sapp didn't say anything. They just sat their horses looking oddly self-satisfied. A few times they flicked their eyes toward Kuno, but they were fleeting looks, and obviously they hadn't recognized him. They were casting the same glances toward the other federales perched atop the train cars over the Gatling guns. When the first of the wagons was within 20 yards, Beers rubbed his stubbled jaw and turned to Spur with an insolent grin.
Yes, sir. We lost a few wagons, we did. But not to bandidos, though we were hit by bandidos, that's for sure.
Sadly, Mexico is dusted from one end to the other by banditos, senor. Banditos and Yaqui. I get so frustrated sometimes. But your guns and powder will be much appreciated, amigos. Of that, I assure you.
Well, you no longer have to worry about that rabid wolf, Carlos Riata. He hit us about 3 days up the trail. Wasn't much of a fight, really.
A very bad bandito indeed. I congratulate and thank you for sending him back to the hell he came from.
The first mule team was turned to Beers's left, swinging the wagon around so that the rear was facing the train. The next wagon in line made the same move until it sat about 15 feet from the first, the tailgate and rear pucker facing the train. As the other wagons followed suit, Kuno glanced at Spur. Now was the time to give the order. Now was the time to turn loose the Yaqui. This was Mexico, after all, and Spur was under no obligation to give these killers a chance to give themselves up. Spur started to raise his hand but stopped, turning and lifting his head to glance puzzledly up at Kuno. Just then, Kuno heard what the old man's ears must have picked up first. Kuno jumped as the Yaqui, standing over the Gatling gun on the second car to his left, flew forward off his car to hit the rail bed. Kuno swung around as the second rifle barked, and the second Yaqui was thrown off the roof of his rail car. He could see two shooters standing on a knoll about 40 yards from the train, beyond a low screen of cedars. Mostly he could see the smoke and flames spitting from their rifle barrels as, each down on one knee, they triggered lead toward the train, wildly levering rounds into their chambers. Kuno threw himself onto the car's roof and began returning fire.
Here's what you bought, you greasy, Mexican, double-dealing bastard!
Kuno tossed a horrified look over his left shoulder to see the rear puckers on all five freight wagons open suddenly to reveal five Gatling guns set up on tripods and five grinning men crouched over them. He also saw the Yaqui, some clad in uniforms, some in their own breech clouts, moccasins, and war paint, bounding toward the wagons while triggering their rifles.
Oh, shit!
Spur made a mad, diving dash through the door of the general's car. At the same time, fire jutted like red knives from the Gatling's revolving canisters. The bullets tore into the rear of the general's car and through the charging Yaqui almost instantly. Five or six going down in just 3 seconds that Kuno watched, the bullets blowing out their backs in great gouts of spewing blood. As the Gatlings kept up their bone-pounding cacophony, Kuno whipped his head forward to see the two riflemen, one a rifle woman as he recognized the one on the left as the blonde Flora, lower their Winchesters, then pick up second rifles lying at their feet. Flora and the male shooter jerked backward, dropping their rifles as they disappeared down the far side of the bluff. Kuno jerked his head down, thinking one of Beers's men had taken over a Gatling gun on the Federales train. Relief washed over him. Fire Eyes was crouched over the gun, turning the crank wildly and swiveling the barrel left to right and back again. Kuno ran up the rail bed, dashed atop the platform of the general's car, crouched, and looked around, pressing his Winchester against his shoulder. The Gatling guns in all five wagons were silenced, the men who'd been manning the guns lying dead around the guns in growing blood pools. Dead Yaqui were sprawled around or hanging over the sides of both wagons where they'd died. Dave Sapp was draped over a wagon wheel with a war hatchet embedded in his skull. Near him lay Redwater, his chest blown out. Left of the wagons, two men were limping off toward the northwest, Spur about 30 yards behind Beers. Both men had lost their hats. Spur was dragging his right leg and blood shone on his back around his right shoulder blade. Beers was even bloodier, dragging both his legs. Now, as he reached a fork of the dry wash, he stumbled forward and dropped to his knees. He twisted around and gritted his teeth as he raised a long-barreled pistol about halfway before dropping his hand suddenly, as though it were weighed down with lead. Spur kept limping toward him, his Star 44 extended straight out from his shoulder.
You miserable bastard! I'd love nothing better than to take you back to the territories and hang your sorry ass in front of a howling crowd, to be followed by a goddamn barn dance. No!
Dust blew up from Beerz's silk shirt and black frock coat, and he jerked back flat against the ground. Spur lowered the pistol and started to turn around. His left knee buckled and he dropped to the ground, sagged back on one hip, the other leg curled beneath him. His deep-seamed face was a mask of agony. Kuno ran to him and dropped to a knee. Spur stared up at him, his tan face flushing crimson as his belly. Spur tapped his left shirt pocket and Kuno reached into the pocket quickly, pulled out a small hide sack and poked his fingers into it. He pulled out a little gold tablet and, ignoring Spur's outstretched hand, shoved the nitro pill directly between the old man's lips and into his mouth.
Hope you washed your hands, kid.
Shut up and lay still for a minute.
Kuno took off his bandana, looked at the wound in the old man's shoulder and the one in his thigh, and decided the thigh needed tending first, and wrapped the bandana tightly around it.
I reckon we got crossways in a crossfire.
Between two double-crossing bastards.
If I die, bury me deep.
Sorry to disappoint you, old man, but you're too mean to die.
Meaner Jakes and me have kicked off, kid.
His color returning, Spur glanced toward where Beerz lay in a bloody pile.
Well, look at him.
Became a whimpering dog at the end.
Kuno removed Spur's own neckerchief and pressed it onto the bloody crease across the top of the lawman's shoulder.
The meanest ones do.
Kuno turned to see FireEyes walking toward them, a Winchester rifle resting on her shoulder.
What happened?
Ticker. Hell, all your warriors dead, girl?
See?
Good Lord. So many of your people gone. I do apologize for my part in it.
For a Yaqui to die fighting is the greatest honor.
FireEyes glanced back at the wagons.
There are many scattered bands of us. I will gather others, and now we will have enough weapons to protect the mountain from future attack, and to run off the miners from the other side.
Kuno placed Spur's hand on the neckerchief he'd been holding on the old lawman's shoulder.
Hold that there. If you're not dead when I get back, I'll cauterize them wounds.
Where are you going?
Gonna see about Flora.
If she ain't dead, try to take her alive. I'd like to hang at least one of these sons of bitches at Fort Bryce.
Kuno glanced at FireEyes, then turned and walked back to the train. He crossed the platform of the general's car, jumped to the ground on the other side. He took one step and threw himself to his left. Kuno rose to his elbows, aiming his Winchester. Flora tumbled toward him from the screen of cedars fronting the knoll that she and the man had been shooting from. She was dragging her boot toes, holding her left arm across her belly. She tried to swing the pistol up again with one hand, but triggered it into the ground in front of her.
Shit.
She dropped to her knees. She hung her head and Kuno stood and walked toward her. When she lifted her chin, her blue eyes were sharp knives stabbing him.
You son of a bitch!
Kuno kicked the gun out of her hand. Flora kept her hard gaze on him, tears streaking her cheeks. He drilled her arm and her lower right side, and she was shaking as though deeply chilled.
My father deserved all this.
Kuno dropped to a knee in front of her, ran his sleeve across a streak of blood on his chin.
Did he really, Flora? Or was that just the story you told yourself and anyone else who listened? Maybe you felt so damn trapped at that fort, you were just desperate enough to kill the old man in cold blood.
She glared at him. Gradually, a faint flush rose in her paling cheeks.
You'll never know.
She fell forward. Kuno caught her and gentled her onto the ground, then rolled her onto her back, her ankles crossing. Her death-glazed eyes stared up at him now without acrimony. Kuno rose, set his rifle on his shoulder, and walked back to the train. FireEyes stood in front of it, staring toward him and the dead blonde behind him. As he approached, she turned and walked off toward the back of the train. Kuno watched her for a time before she leapt onto a platform between two cars and disappeared. He went back to find Spur sitting against a withered willow, rolling a cigarette.
Kid, if you can get me back to Diamondback, New Mexico territory, I'll be eternally grateful.
Forget grateful? How about getting me an amnesty from the governor, whoever's giving him out these days?
Can't promise it, but I'll give it a shot.
Kuno thought about it, looking off across the northern hills and mountains. He looked at Spur.
Who's in Diamondback?
A Sawbones who can breathe new life into me.
What's her name?
June Dickinson.
Good looking?
What do you think?
I reckon I'd best build us a fire, tend to those wounds of yours, then get started on a travoy.
I reckon you'd better.
Kuno turned to stride off toward the creek. Then he spun around, lowering his Winchester. FireEyes galloped her cream out away from one of the stock cars and the gunrunner's bloody wagons before reining the stallion around sharply and galloping east. Kuno looked at Spur.
Where the hell you suppose she's going?
Wouldn't know, but you can bet she'll be back for the guns.
Spur adjusted his wounded leg on the ground.
Forget her, kid. I've said it before, but I've never meant it half as much as I mean it now. The girl's dangerous.
Yeah, she sure is.
.45 caliber 8 Crossfire is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2012 by Peter Brandvold. Published by arrangement with Peter Brandvold. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2018, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Unauthorized download and/or duplication is prohibited. Performed by Terrence Aselford as Spur Morgan, Alejandro Ruiz as Kuno Massey, Yasmin Toison as Camilla, Kimberly Gilbert as Akoma, David Jordan as Dave Sapp, Tracy Oliveira as Flora, and Chris Gennebach as Major Beers, with Bradley Smith, Andy Clements, Scott McCormick, Rose Elizabeth Supan, Mort Shelby, Ken Jackson, Richard Rowan, and Kenyatta Rogers. Adapted for Graphic Audio and directed by Nathaniel Perry. Produced by Rick Rowan, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Nathaniel Perry. If you enjoyed .45 caliber 8 Crossfire, be sure to look for the Yakima Henry series by Frank Leslie. Available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloads and podcasts. And remember to check out the free Graphic Audio Story Podcast, or GASP, available on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Holt Corrigan is your brother, I take it?
Yeah. Haven't seen him for a long time.
Heard he was in a gunfight in Amarillo. Got himself killed.
Heard that too.
He would have been involved in every bank holdup in 3 states if you believed everything you hear.
Help the little lady up and apologize.
Or what?
Yes. It involves lead.
There'll be another time.
Anytime you want to die.
Two men are out there. Just rode up. One's an Oriental, the other's white. I think he's only got one arm.
Sounds like my brother, Blue Corrigan. Lost his left arm in the war.
You still preaching?
I help with services in town from time to time.
Touch my family, and you will die a horrible death.
And that's Silka with Blue. Silka's our partner. Nakashima Silka is his full name.
You must be calm. The trick is to unbalance the opponent.
There's another story about you. 2 years ago in Austin, the way I heard it, three fellas were leaving the bank after robbing it and ran into you. You took down the first gunman with only your hands while he was pointing a 6-gun at your belly. In a split second, you grabbed the gun, killed the second outlaw, wounded the third. Heard that story all over Texas. Thought it was crazy talk. Until I saw you in action today. Now I've got a hunch it was true.
Are you D. Corrigan?
I am. Want to make something of it?
Hell no!
I'm not interested in going against D. Corrigan. You know that.
Well, neither am I, Aegon.
What are we gonna do?
We're going in.
This is a setup, Blue. You know that.
Of course it is. But I don't see any other way.
How about using our guns?
The Corrigan Brothers.
Available now in graphic audio.
Thanks for listening to this graphic audio production. Graphic Audio has over 1,000 titles and 100 series to choose from in high-quality download formats. If you'd like to listen to an entire series, you can now conveniently purchase a download series set from GraphicAudio.net. At GraphicAudio.net, you can also earn loyalty rewards points, redeemable towards future online purchases. You can stream or get full downloads directly to your mobile phone or tablet with our newly updated Graphic Audio Access app, available on all Android and Apple devices. Listen to a movie in your mind, on the go, anytime, anywhere. And be sure to listen to our new free Graphic Audio Story Podcast, GASP, featuring all new serialized episodes of a complete full-length story, along with episodes that feature short stories in our graphic audio format. Once you do, we're confident you'll want to subscribe, give us a 5-star review, and recommend us to your friends and family. You can subscribe to GASP through Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, and RSS feeds. Coming this fall, look for Graphic Audio Streams, our new streaming subscription service. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases. Like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter or Instagram. Call 1-800-670-5220 or visit www.graphicaudio.net.